My name is Isaiah Jackson.
And this is Gary Leland, and you're listening to episode 142 of the Crypto Cousins Podcast.
Feed your interest in Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies by joining Hall of Fame podcaster Gary Leland on the Crypto Cousins Podcast. And remember, we are all cousins in the world of crypto. This week's price of Bitcoin.
$9,653. That's up $142 or 1.5% over the past 7 days.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. Welcome to the show, Isaiah.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
It turns out that we kind of grew up close to each other, but at like way different time periods, dude. I'm from South Carolina and you're from North Carolina.
Oh, yeah. The good old Carolinas. Yep. From Charlotte. And yeah, been to South Carolina a lot. And my dad lives there now. So.
Where at in South Carolina?
Rock Hill, right across the state line. So
yeah. I lived down on James Island outside of Charleston. So that's about three, four hours, I think.
Okay. Yeah. My grandmother's from Charleston. So a lot of family in South Carolina.
Yeah. Charleston was a good place to grow up as a kid. Well, we grew up on an island. It was good out there because we were at the beach all the damn time.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you got the beach, it can't be too bad. Yeah.
You come from a family of teachers, though, right?
Absolutely. So my mother is a teacher. Grandmother was a teacher. I have an aunt set of teachers. I have cousins around the country who are in the education system, either on school board or principal. So yes, grew up in the education system a lot. And saw my mom teach for over 25 years now.
That's a big move, you know, moving from Charlotte, North Carolina to L.A. I mean, I moved from, like I said, Charleston to Dallas, Texas, and I thought that was a bigger move. Yours is a bigger move than mine. What made you decide to move out to LA?
I started KRBE Digital Assets Group with my business partner, King. Our consultant was doing fine, but we were on different coasts. He was already in LA, and he was just getting out of the Navy, and he was in LA, and I was in Charlotte. And we decided we needed to do a daily show to get the information out faster, which is called The Gentleman of Crypto. And he convinced me one summer, 2017, to come out and hang out with him just to see what it's like. And then September that year, I got in my car in Charlotte and drove out here to LA, which was four of the most fun days. But yeah, it was a pretty big move, but I was just ready. I was ready to move anyway. And it worked out because the show is now at 570 episodes and been going strong ever since. And our business has increased as well.
You're 570. My 4-minute Bitcoin show is 581. So I'm just barely ahead of you. It's every weekday. I do like you do. It's funny, I drove out here a long time ago. That was a long time ago. I was 29, I guess, at the time. And that was a big disruption or change in your lifestyle when you moved that far away. So you were already in crypto, though. You discovered crypto when you were in North Carolina and then moved out to LA.
So 2013 is when I found out about it. Ironically, from a banker, I found out about it. And, you know, I was in Raleigh at the time. I was a teacher and, you know, when you're in your 20s, still trying to find your way, almost anything, you'll try it. The good thing is I understood the reason for Bitcoin more than the price. Being tech-based and working in IT over the years just helped reassure that. So yeah, I started out in North Carolina. And then when I came to California, just took it up a notch.
So tell me about The Gentleman of Crypto.
So it's a daily show. It comes on at 10 a.m. Pacific time. And we go through news, updates, and answer questions for anybody who pops into the live show. And most of our crowd has stuck since 2017, 2018. After that bull run in December 2017, everybody wanted to know about Bitcoin. So we gained a big crowd, but they've stuck because we've consistently put out content that is relevant to the time as well as it's live. So you know you're speaking to people who know what they're talking about. Some people, you know, they are okay in the crypto space, but they pre-record everything and they have a script. We literally go live every day and can answer whatever questions you have. So yeah, it's The Gentleman Crypto is really taking off.
Yeah. My 4-minute crypto is a script, but I got to get my info out in 4 minutes. Or I'm not going to be able to if I don't script it, right? I'm not going to do it in 4 minutes. So I got to really cut it down. But this show I record also, though, I don't do much editing unless someone says, hey, don't put that in there. But, you know, or someone screws up or something like that. But you know, I find that I enjoy watching live shows and I'd like to get into that. I just can't find out time. So I'm hoping someday I find someone like you have that's a partner that I can work with that can like handle that end of it, you know, and we could build a show. Because I think those are great shows when you can bring in questions like that. And I'm sure that's what you do. You have people that ask you questions during the show and you can answer the questions live.
Absolutely. Yep. We answer questions every day. Anything going on in the market, some opinionated, mostly facts. But yeah, any questions you have, you can pop in on the Gentleman of Crypto and ask away.
Is that at gentlemanofcrypto.com or how do people find that?
On YouTube, you can find us at The Gentleman of Crypto. Yep. And website is being rebuilt. So I don't want to put it out now, but it will be up as well.
Okay. Now, really, I think, I don't know if this is what you're most known for, but this is kind of like your hot thing right now, I guess, is your book.
Yep.
Bitcoin and Black America. So let's jump to that real quick, too. And tell us about your book. Just give us a rundown on it real quick.
Oh, yeah. So Bitcoin and Black America was written and published last year, July 11th, 2019. And a fun fact, the only time President Trump has ever tweeted about Bitcoin was on the day my book was released. So that kind of gave it a boost when it first came out. And since
that's
then, cool. Yeah, that's what I said. It's free promotion. I didn't have to pay for it, but a lot of people Google Bitcoin and Bitcoin and Black America came up for a lot of people. So that book came out. And one of the things I wanted to do was make my message more efficient and get it to as many people as possible. And I also wanted to make sure that the Black community realizes that Bitcoin is a great opportunity for us economically, even though we don't much, you know, many Black people don't know about it. And unfortunately, the media does a good job of that misinformation because, you know, Bitcoin was it's tulips. Bitcoin was a scam. It's used by drug dealers. All of that stuff is what the media says. So I wanted to write a concise book for the people in my community so that they could read it, apply it, and see that a regular person such as myself has been in Bitcoin for years now. And I'm not a nuclear physicist or, you know, one of the super smart people. It's just learning it and applying it. So wrote the book for that reason. And I'm glad people are taking a liking to it and are able to process the knowledge.
What motivated you really to write this book? Because you knew the content. And so, I mean, what made you say, hey, I'm going to write this particular book? Because you could have written a book about anything.
Yeah. So the idea, I started thinking about it 2016. After it was following the Mike Brown protest, they got killed in Ferguson. And one of the things I wanted to do is what is happening now, protest again. I wanted to stop him from happening because I wanted us to have an economic solution so that we could control the neighborhoods that are being terrorized. And started thinking about it. The same roommate that told me about Bitcoin, I kicked around the idea with him. He loved it. And then I was like, well, I'll write it when it's time. And that's how it came about. And I started writing it in 2019. And finished it that year. And, you know, one of the biggest motivations, too, was to get the book out before something like what's happened the last couple months happened. Because if I just wrote the book and just published it, I could be seen as an opportunist or somebody who's trying to take advantage of the moment. But I tell people, I've been talking about this for years.
No, so, I saw this book a while ago, as a matter of fact.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So that was sort of the urgency of getting it out last year, because I knew 2020 was going to be pretty big.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that I saw maybe 2 weeks ago a video on, I saw it on Twitter. You may have seen the same video of at a Black Lives Movement meeting. Someone was speaking and he said to the crowd, you know, we have got to get into Bitcoin, basically. You know, we are using the money that is holding us back. You know, we're keeping them in power by using their money. And even if you spend $5, you know, or $10 on Bitcoin, you're doing something to help the people, basically, instead of helping the banks that are holding us down. I thought that was a pretty powerful message that the guy made. You know what video I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was made out here in LA it was downtown, I believe. And it was funny because when the video started circulating, because he had a mask on and people couldn't see him, people thought it was me. Because I live in LA. So people know I live in LA. So I got a lot of messages on Twitter from people saying, was that you? Did you sneak into a protest and say, because they had never, I guess, heard a Black person be that open about Bitcoin in public. And I said, no, we're waking up. People are starting to realize, yeah, the thing that is holding us back, the root of the problem is the money system. So I was glad to see that. I follow him on Twitter, talked to him a couple of times. So yeah, it's great to see. And I think some people got the message, but I think most people will with news such as PayPal today.
Yeah, that's strong news.
that's very big news.
If that comes true, if it's not a rumor, I mean, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. If it comes true, that'll be great, because then people will say, hey, this isn't going away. I mean, I think Cash App was enough proof that it's not going away. Them accepting or allowing people to buy Bitcoin. But yes, glad that message got out. And I got offered money from other sources to go to a protest and do the same thing. But I was like, that was organic. That was perfect. That's exactly how it should be. Nobody was expecting it. So I love it.
And in case you're listening and you don't know what Isaiah and I are talking about with the news, it was a news article came out today that's rumored that PayPal and Vimeo are going to start selling Bitcoin, and maybe the announcement will be made within the next 3 months or something, if I'm correct, which, like you said, that'd be, I mean, what do they have, like 150 million users or something? Heck, if even...
300 million.
Yeah. 300, yeah, so even if 1% of them join up, that's a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could start an incredible thing. Yeah, I saw that, and I saw that, like I said, that guy give his talk, and I've seen a sign here and there during an event, you know, buy Bitcoin, blah, 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 Bitcoin. But I wish we would see more of that, because I think you've got a great point. That's a great way. I think I made a post about it 2 weeks ago. So saying, you know, it seems to me like buying Bitcoin would be a good way to get your point across, or anyone to get their point across and accomplish what they want. If you defund the people who are causing you problems.
Exactly.
You mean, I don't know. It doesn't sound like rocket science to me. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it sounds so simple. It's complicated. You know, I mean, you tell people that and they're like, nah, it's got to be more. We got to do. And I was like, honestly, the most peaceful protest you can have is just simply buying Bitcoin. Take your money out of the banks. Stop using their services. At least if you start using Bitcoin, there's a push from the Black community to use Bitcoin. At the very least, they'll have to change their practices. Even if banks don't go away forever, and, you know, like some people think, at the very least, they have to change their practices, and they will have to offer a better product in order to get your business, because Bitcoin is becoming more and more, you know, easier to use. Onboarding is a lot easier. So, yes, I think Bitcoin can get the banks back in line. And you're right. I think that's the best way for us to protest.
I think it's kind of like when I was a kid, being a little kid, you know, Martin Luther King led protests and, you know, peaceful protests. But if stores during the civil rights movements were not caring about the Black consumer and treating them not in a good way, they had times when they just would quit shopping.
They boycott.
Yeah, thanks. And then when they boycotted, they said, geez, we need that business. We're going to go out of business. We need to change our tunes. Because money is a big, big mover in this country. Money is like sometimes the only thing people understand.
Exactly. And the boycott, the Montgomery bus boycott that they did after Rosa Parks wasn't allowed to sit, they bankrupted them. They had to, it was probably, you know, two busing companies. And once that one big one went bankrupt, like six new ones popped up because they simply didn't give them their money. And, you know, that is one way to do it. But at the time, they didn't have Bitcoin. Now we can go a step further and we can defund the entire system that is literally the only thing funding your terror right now. So if you actually want to solve the problem, you got to go to the source. All this other stuff is mostly smoke and mirrors. But once you start talking about the source, I think we'll get a better understanding of how to solve the issues. Yeah,
I agree with you 100%. I think that is good. And I think your book, like I said, I told you earlier, I'm in the middle of another book that I saw you recommend, actually, The Cost Price of Tomorrow, I think.
The Price of Tomorrow, yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm about halfway through, so I'm going to read yours next. So if your book's going into that, I think that's a great message that I believe in also. So I'm kind of excited to get into that and read that book there. I didn't realize, though, that during the Montgomery situation with Rosa Parks, I knew there was boycotts. I didn't realize they actually, because of the boycotts, that the bus company that caused the whole issue went out of business.
Yep. They boycotted them for a whole year. So
well, it'll put you out of business.
That'll put you out of business. So yeah. And even though it was publicly funded, so to say, it was private interest involved and they had to restructure and start all over. So yep, it works. And it's been done with other businesses, just not as much today, only because I think a lot of people in the Black community don't know that their dollars are going towards companies who are funding their terror. A lot of the big corporations, a lot of the private prisons that are built, a lot of the police violence we've seen is all as a result of the money you use. So we got to find a different way.
I met Rosa Parks maybe 15 years ago, And you wouldn't think that such a little woman would be so powerful. I mean, to be honest with you, because she's just a small little woman. But she had a power, and she was determined. If a little woman, little lady can do that, start something like that, anything can be started. And Bitcoin can definitely go that way. How are sales going with the book, by the way, before I go further? Are they what you expected, or are they doing better?
Actually, last 2 weeks, volume has been exponential. I've sold about 10 times as many books in the last 2 weeks than I have the entire year.
Yeah.
So as far as it picking up, I think people are starting to see the message. I had about 4 or 5 new bookstores that are carrying it. So sales are going good. I'm just happy people are finally seeing that this is a solution more than just, you know, Bitcoin price go up. It's like, no. This is actually solution based. And we're getting a lot of new eyes on it. So, people who are older is sort of the crowd I was going for as far as getting them simple explanations, and also younger crowds, college and young, high school and younger, so that they are introduced to it. So people in the middle class like us, you know, you kind of want to just keep it in the road. You got kids, you got a mortgage. It's kind of hard to discuss it with them. But the younger generation, as well as the older people who may have a little bit more money, I definitely wanted this book to be simple for them.
Well, I think, you know, that's a real problem with Bitcoin is that a lot of people see it as orange coin goes up only,
yeah.
You know, and they don't realize it's anything but an investment vehicle. And then they go, nah, that's way too volatile of an investment vehicle for me. And really, that's not all it is. They just don't see it that way. And I was telling you before the show, you know, I think I face some of the same issues you face, but in talking to boomers, you know, because they're like, maybe even be worse. They probably are the worst of all to deal with because they're all set in their ways.
They're stuck. Yeah, they're stuck in their ways.
and as I posted this morning on Twitter, you know, a lot of boomers, at least ways that I hang out with, are retired. And they're pretty much set. I mean, maybe they're not going to be any wealthier, but they pretty much can live the rest of their lives and have their bills paid and take a trip here and there and see their kids and eat and not have to worry about anything. So they're kind of going, why do I need to take a chance? You know, I'm already 70 and I know I got enough money, and with Social Security and with Medicare, that I can live the rest of my life, you know, and why take a chance on going for the orange coin go up? And then it doesn't, and now I'm wrecked, you know, at 70.
Yeah, true. And one thing I always tell older people of older generations, one thing I tell them is the trust you have in your pension and your retirement, it only takes one time for it to crack. The one time you can't take your money out of your pension, or the one time banks go insolvent, like in 08, and they can't give you your money, it only takes once for them, in my mind, to be like, okay, well, the trust we were promised is not here. With Bitcoin, supposedly Bitcoin has died 1,000 times. Somehow it's still here. It went from 6 cents to almost 10,000. So volatility is great if it's in your favor. So, you know, I try to remind them, like, look, Bitcoin can fail 1,000,000 times in your mind, but it's never actually going anywhere. That pension fails, that's human error. That's not going to be very good. So I don't try to scare anybody. I just think you should have a plan B.
Well, I think that the pensions, they really have a big issue there anyway.
Yep.
I mean, I think they're unsustainable as to what they are. I mean, when some guy works somewhere and then he gets the last paycheck for the rest of his life and he's going to live another 30 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, because it's even like Social Security. I started getting Social Security at 65, which is great. Well, I don't get it yet. I'm waiting until 70 to get the most, but I could get it. And it's kind of like going, gosh, you know, with today's science and the shape I'm in and how people are doing nowadays, I might live to 100.
Yeah.
So how could they possibly afford to give me money for 35 years, even though I put it in? What I'm getting back is so much more. And then I'm getting Medicare, which is like, oh my gosh, that's like the greatest thing ever invented. If you were like me and you were paying, I had an $8,000 deductible and I was paying $2,000 a month for insurance. That's a heck of a deal if you're in my situation and you're self-employed and you were old, you know? So I just don't know. And that's just like a pension. I don't know how they can possibly do that. And that's what I think Bitcoin is the safety valve for, because I think they're going to shut those down. You know, I went to my bank. I took a picture of it. I went to my bank like 3 weeks ago and it was shut down. And there was just a sign on the door saying we're closed. Call us if you need to get into your safety deposit box. That's all it said. Didn't say when it was opening. didn't say that's jack, just a sign saying it was closed, and give a call if you need to get into your safety deposit box for an emergency.
Yep. And unfortunately, I've said this for years. I was like, imagine waking up and your bank is just closed. That happened.
That was mine, like three weeks ago. And it's Bank of America. It wasn't like some little bank.
Mine was Wells Fargo. It was shut down except for appointments. And I was like, so y'all, do people really think that they can't just shut down and be like, well, we'll see you when you see, when we see you. They can do that tomorrow. And what will you do? Because it happened in Greece. They shut down banks for like a week and nobody could get money out of ATMs. And the price of Bitcoin went up, I think, 20 something percent in Greece, because they were like, well, I still have to buy stuff. What options do I have? So I think banks will eat themselves. I like to say that all the time, is that their policies are built for crises not to happen. So when it does, they eat themselves. They print more money. The Fed prints more money. Banks have to shut down. Their services are unavailable, and there's still humans that work there. So their money is affected. So how do you think they're going to feel coming back to that? So yeah, you're right. 2 weeks ago when you went?
We went like 2 weeks before to start pulling out money. And I told my wife to go get a certain amount of cash out of there. And she went out there and said, now all you can have is $3,000. And she said, what do you mean? And they said, that's all money you can have. And she goes, you know, William, we have more than that in there. And I said, but that's all we can have. I don't understand what you're, my wife just couldn't understand it, because she has no concept that the banks could close. That's not even her, that's not even her brainwave. When she came home and told me, I was like, yeah, that figures. And my wife was just kind of like, what do you mean? No matter how many times they told her, she couldn't understand it. And they said, you can come back tomorrow and try to get the same amount again. And she goes, well, I'd have to come back for quite a few days to get what we were planning on taking. Well, and so you guarantee I can get that much more? She said, no, I can't guarantee you can get that much more. It could change. But now it's open. It was kind of a weird deal. And so we've gotten out what we felt like we needed to get out. That's kind of a weird deal, isn't it? You go to a bank and it's closed.
Yeah, that was a test run, I think. You go to a bank, it's closed. What do you do? And a lot of people might have panicked, but that's what plan B, that's what Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are for. You got to have some sort of backup plan if you need to buy stuff. There is nothing better right now. Can't rely on banks.
What do you think would happen if all the banks closed instead of some of them for a week or two?
I think we would finally have the mutiny that people should have shown before. It just would go towards the right direction. We should be just going straight at banks and Federal Reserve anyway. But I think once that happens, I think people will stop the thought process of everything the USA does is good. All of our systems work. I don't need to deal with that. Because when you talk about Bitcoin to people in countries where their governments have failed them over and over, they get it instantly. As soon as you say it, they're like, oh, yeah, I definitely need a plan B against this government. In America, we're kind of spoiled. Everything's been working fine. You can go make money and put it into a bank. As soon as it stops, that promise that the banks have and the fiduciary commitment that they have is over. They don't really care about you. They never did. You'll just have evidence. So I think we'll see a wave of people who panic. And we'll see some people who go into Bitcoin. Some people will probably start pushing gold, or trying to buy more gold. I think that time is coming sometime soon.
You know, I think what's happened in our country is, you know, the Depression was so long ago and the bank closings were so long ago and the government taking your gold was so long ago that most people don't even hardly know what happened. And if they do know what happened, they don't know how bad it was. And they definitely don't know that the government came and took your gold and said you couldn't own it anymore. They don't know that at all. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a situation. Hey, before we go any further, I do want to take a moment here to tell everybody about BitBlock Boom. If you're not familiar with BitBlock Boom, check out the conference I'm putting on. This is the third year we've put on BitBlock Boom. It's a real Bitcoin conference. And I say real because that's all we talk about is Bitcoin. It's not a cryptocurrency conference or an altcoin conference or a blockchain conference. It's a Bitcoin conference. And that's pretty much all we talk about. So check it out at bitblockboom.com. It's scheduled for August, the end of August in Dallas. And it's going to be a pretty big conference this year. Well, it's not big. We limit it to 300 people. So it's a limited size conference, but it's going to be our best one yet. So check that out at bitblockboom.com and see what our lineup looks like. Like I said, I invite you before the show. If we can make it work, I'd like to get you out there to speak at BitBlock.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I thought that was funny. On a show, I told you I watched you on several other YouTube interviews yesterday. I spent quite a little bit of time watching you. And you were talking to someone about a conference in Washington, D.C. that was putting on a Bitcoin, a Black Bitcoin conference, I guess we would say. And then, and the way you put it made me laugh. I mean, I maybe it's not funny and I shouldn't be saying that, but you were like, I was the only Black guy at the white conference. And I thought that was really funny, you know, and it's really hard. Maybe it's not. Maybe I've just been looking in the wrong place. But, you know, out of all the people who've asked me to speak at BitBlock Boom, which I've turned away a lot of people, this year I didn't have one Black person ask me to speak. You know, so I take it for granted that there's not as many Black people into Bitcoin as there are white people. Do you think that's a true point, or do you think I'm just like colorblind? I'm not seeing it.
Oh, yeah. Demographically, there isn't that many Black people who are in the Bitcoin space. And just crossing paths is one of the things that has enabled me to become pretty successful in this space. Is, like I said, I used to go to conferences all the time, you know, just solo show up, and I would meet people who, you know, maybe they had a conference or they had a business. So BitBlock Boom, Black people just didn't know about it. So Sinclair Skinner, who, you know, he has a company called BitMari. He started the Black Blockchain Summit in DC. And it's, you know, we've had hundreds of people for the last 2 years. And I was the keynote speaker last year. And one of the things that I wanted to encourage people to do was to not only come to a Black Blockchain conference, but go to other conferences so that you can be out, people can see you, you can introduce, network. Because like you said, as far as the Bitcoin space, it's for everybody. So you don't necessarily go looking for a certain demographic of people, whether that's Black, whether it's, yeah, you know, Asian. You just don't go looking for it, because that's how Bitcoin worked. It was for everybody. You find it, you use it. So I'm with you there. And going forward, I think you'll have much more interest from the Black community with the work that I'm doing, with the work that others are doing. So yeah, we'll definitely get that change.
Last year, we had two speakers and one canceled at the last minute. Just couldn't make it because of an issue. And the year before, we had one. And in the last 2 years, I haven't had any women. I took a lot of grief about that, but not one woman asked. You know, it was the same situation. I just was looking at, you know, I pretty much just, I get an email and I go, who is this? And I look and go, okay, you look like you'd be a great speaker. I'd like to hear you. And I line them up. And then I got a bunch last year, and I never even noticed it about the women. And so this year, I was telling someone about it, and they said, well, I'd like to speak. I said, well, why haven't you asked? You can speak. I'd love to have you speak.
Just send me an email. Yeah.
So I'm trying to move on that, but that was kind of funny. Hey, I got some questions here for you to get off of BitBlock Boom, because I don't want this, you know, I talk about that way too much. It's kind of like becoming a BitBlock Boom conference show, and that's not my goal here. I'm going to ask some of these questions here from people on Twitter. I don't think I have anything that should be crazy here. Let's see what your answers are. First one is MindU 1504-8849. I don't know. What do you think that means, 1504-8849?
It's probably a bot, but it's all good.
Oh, you think it is?
Is it less than 100 followers?
I don't know. I just copied it over. Oh, is it, if it's a weird name like that, it's usually a bot. Sam, oh, boomer. I don't know a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. Usually bots. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it asks a pretty decent question. Mm-hmm. Why would a bot ask this question?
Well, you can control your bots with these questions, but yeah, I got you.
Okay. What happens when the Federal Reserve bans fiat on ramps?
As far as like Coinbase on ramps, uphold?
Yeah. If government says, hey, Coinbase, we're shutting you down, and we're taking all the Bitcoin that's on there too, probably what would happen?
Yeah. Well, whenever people think that they can shut down these businesses, I tell them, I promise you, there will be other ones that pop up. And on top of that, legally, there's something called a bit license. Gemini has it. Coinbase has it. So legally, they wouldn't get shut down. And they do hand over their data to government officials. So I don't think any on-ramps will be shut down unless they didn't follow those rules. If the Fed wanted to, quote unquote, shut it down, the only effective way would be to say that they had practices where terrorists were using their platform and were moving money. You know what I mean? It would be sort of that sort of problem. But I think they would clear it up and they wouldn't get shut down. Only thing that could really shut them down is if people don't want to use them. Because as soon as one exchange shuts down, I promise you there's somebody waiting with an idea for another exchange, because Bitcoin is legal. You can use it anywhere. So people will use VPNs, maybe use international exchanges. People may start using decentralized exchanges to convert. You know, there's no way to really stop it. Pandora's box has been open.
Yeah, I agree completely. Our next question is from Status Quant. Which specific community in the U.S. today is best positioned to convert into a full circular Bitcoin economy? I don't even know what that question means. So,
so as far as Bitcoin being used in a circular economy, I believe Black people have the best use case for it, because when you talk about group economics, every time we've tried group economics, it's been with brick and mortar stores and in Black Wall Street in Tulsa and Rosewood and Florida and Wilmington, North Carolina. There have been Black owned Wall Street or businesses that are in a community, and they all got burned to the ground. And the reason being, of course, you have racists who didn't like them. But Bitcoin is best for Black people as a circular economy because we can have a digital economy and you can't burn that down. And you can build and have group economics and support each other's businesses so that the entire community is leveled up. Much like here in LA, we have Koreatown, you have Little Ethiopia, you have a lot of different communities that support each other as a close-knit group. And I think that would be great as a circular economy for Black people. I think we have the best shot at it. Best use case, I think, is for us. We should be at the forefront pushing it. I mean, just along with everybody else.
So that makes sense. And like you said, you have in LA, Little Korea, I mean, you have Chinatown and places. You have a lot of cities I go to, there'll be ethnic communities that all seem to support each other with their shops and everything. But I don't see that as much in the Black community. Am I wrong? Or have I just been hanging out at the wrong place? I mean, which could be.
You're right. But that was a concerted effort. One thing I want to remind people is that Black business owners in the 40s, when they tried to build businesses in certain, especially in the South, they were denied loans. And then those loans were instead given to immigrants. That's why you have a lot of Korean stores in the middle of the hood in LA.
Okay.
So you have a lot of, that's why you have a lot of Indian shop owners in the neighborhoods in Charlotte where I grew up. Because those loans were given to immigrants over Black people simply because there was a law, I can't remember the name of it, but a banking law against discrimination against immigrants. It wasn't applied to Black people for some reason because the power that we supposedly can wield, I guess, scared banks off. But yes, that's why you don't see it. And then when Black people do open these businesses, a lot of times you have provocateurs, you have police that can shut it down. You have outside forces that will work to actively get rid of Black communities or Black-owned businesses in these communities. So it's been a struggle, it's been a fight, but there are a lot of online businesses starting now, a lot of Black-owned businesses that don't have to have brick and mortar. So we're still moving along just fine, but you're right. You go to Black neighborhoods, you don't really see a lot of Black-owned businesses. And unfortunately, the media has picked that up as, oh, y'all must not want businesses. It's like, no. This has been a concerted effort to keep Black people away from building another Black Wall Street or something as big, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that would be a stupid reasoning the media would come up with. I don't think there's a human being who isn't excited about being in charge of their own destiny if they could possibly do it. And that's what being an entrepreneur allows you to do, to at least ways partially be in control of your own destiny. So that doesn't make any sense at all. So that's another case also for Bitcoin then, is what we're getting at here, basically, is that Bitcoin don't care. Bitcoin don't care if you're Black, white, Asian, gay. It just don't care. It's just going to keep doing the same thing, and you can get on the bandwagon and take advantage of it or not. That's your prerogative. But if you want to jump in and get on the bandwagon, they just don't care.
Exactly. And that's the solution we need. We need an unbiased solution that involves money. And Bitcoin seems to be the best one right now.
Yeah. You don't need to worry about going to a bank and getting a bank account.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about getting turned down at the bank account.
You don't have to worry about them telling you can only take out $3,000 either.
Yeah. Or going up and it's closed.
Yeah, exactly. Bitcoin never closes.
Yeah, both of those were weird to me. I mean, and maybe more weird because I've been around a long time, but I kind of expected it. Let's see. Same, another question. Other than financial prosperity, what do you want to accomplish in life?
I want freedom. And by that, I mean real freedom, the ability to do what I want when I wake up every morning. So it's not only financial prosperity, learning how to grow my own food, learning how to farm, learning how to, you know, build my own or construct my own houses, you know, just complete and total freedom. And I would really like to be on an island somewhere far away within the next 5 years. So that is really my goal. You know, everybody should want to attain some level of freedom. And that's all I've been working for. Money is just a tool to get that freedom.
So you have an island and area of the world in mind?
I got a couple, still trying to figure out which one, but yeah, I got a couple places I would really love to stay for a while.
Where do you see America in 10 years?
Either completely changed, or we will not remember America as it was, simply because if the financial system...
Well, that could be, even if it's completely changed, that could be true.
Yeah. And what I mean by changed is the people that are in control, it kind of flips to more you know, diverse younger crowd, and America kind of switches its tune, or we'll be like the Romans. We'll, you know, mess ourselves up from the inside out, and America won't be as viable as people think, and not as great a place, unfortunately. But I think in 10 years, we'll solve those problems. And I think not just Bitcoin, but just the mindset of people is changing now. If you've noticed, a lot of people's tune has changed. A lot of corporations have changed their way of thinking. I think in 10 years, we'll clear that up. I am kind of cautious to say that only because there have been people who were a part of the fight in the 60s and 70s. Like, yeah, this is definitely going to be fine in the next 10, 15. And then we're in 2020 still having the same fight. So just want to be cautious there. But I think financially things are changing. So we'll see real change in 10 years.
So, you know, this is a question I'm asking. Getting into today's world, what's going on in the United States and everything, what do you think of a community like CHOP going on? I mean, I kind of am concerned on that because, like, yesterday I saw some guy was killed and they couldn't even get in there to try to figure it out. And that didn't seem like good news to me. I mean, people walking around with guns is not a big deal because I see white people walking around with guns, you know, and I don't go, oh, my God, there's a white guy with a gun. So I don't know why I should feel any differently if on TV I see a black guy walking with a gun. I mean, you know, if it's legal to have a gun, who cares? But exactly. That kind of got me yesterday when the police couldn't come in there to try to work the crime scene, I guess.
Yeah. And I think CHOP, I mean, if you think about it, it's kind of like the beginning of Bitcoin. It's random. It's all over the place. There's no real leader. They're starting from scratch. And to build a community from scratch, we'll see how it works. But some of the essential services they need, they don't have them yet. And like I said, if you compare it to the start of Bitcoin, it was almost no way for you to get it on an exchange. There were no exchanges,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah, you had to send money in an envelope to some guy and hope that showed up.
Or meet him at a coffee house like I did for the first 2 years. You know what I mean? So I think anything you start from scratch is going to have its bumps and things going through. I do want to say in the community that they're building, they have made a concerted effort to make sure that if people want to live in separate parts, they separate people based on that. And then everybody comes back together, you know, whenever they want to. So CHOP is an experiment. I have to see more about it, but yeah. This reminds me of Bitcoin building from scratch. It's like, when you're building from scratch, you have to go through these trials and errors. And I don't really believe much from the media as far as how bad things are. And I don't ever really think things are as good as they say. So I think it's somewhere a happy medium. And I think they'll figure it out to an extent. We'll see how far the city of Seattle goes.
Yeah. But that's true. I mean, or how far, I guess, even the president lets him go. I mean, exactly. He could always send troops in there. So it's not just up to the city of Seattle when maybe nothing's up to anyone anymore. I mean, you know, the bankers, I guess, are pretty much going to decide what happens in there. You know, when we really get down to it. That's really about it, except I have one last question. Do you listen to any podcasts? And what podcasts do you listen to?
Well, I really only listen to maybe two podcasts. I listen to Anthony Pompliano's podcast. And as far as regular information, I listen to Joe Budden, his podcast. It's a rap podcast. And just catching up because I'm getting older now. I can't keep up with music. So I kind of listen to him to see what's going on. But yeah, those are pretty much the only two. I do a lot of podcasting and videos, but I don't listen to them a lot. So it's kind of weird. I really don't have as much time, but yeah, those are the two I try and catch.
That's weird that you said you're getting older now and you don't listen to music much. And, you know, I don't listen to music at all anymore. And I used to all the time, but you know, I set up a turntable here in my office and I've started bringing, I have like 300 or 400 albums, you know, from the 70s. So I bring up two or three every day now.
Oh, nice. Well, yes. Yeah, I need to bring some of my vinyl there. We can jam out.
I collect
70s vinyl too.
Yeah, every morning I put on, I had Tower of Power this morning and then went to Rolling Stone. So, it's kind of funny listening to that old vinyl. And gosh, some of them, I don't know how I screwed them up so bad, you know, because they are scratched. Oh, yeah. Where can they buy the book at, first of all? Let's get there. Where can they buy the book at?
You can head to Amazon and just type in Bitcoin in Black America. I was an Amazon bestseller on there. I do want to shout out to them. You can go to BitcoinInBlackAmerica.com if you want an autographed copy. And you can find me on Twitter at BitcoinZay, Z-A-Y.
And before we go, I always ask this, is there anything maybe I didn't cover that you want to make sure and tell everybody? I don't want to miss something out since you took the time to come on the show with me. If there was something you wanted to tell people or announcement or something in particular you wanted to share that I didn't think of to ask.
Well, that was all for me. I mean, you asked perfect questions and the questions from Twitter were great as well. Yeah, got okay. Everything out. I just want people to read the book. And keep buying Bitcoin.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming on the show. I do appreciate it. And just to let you know, you are officially a crypto cousin now.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for coming on the show. I do appreciate that.
Thank you, sir.
I hope you've enjoyed today's show, and I want to give a big thank you to all my cousins out there for listening and subscribing. If you haven't subscribed yet, just go to CryptoCousins.com and you'll see the links for all the places you can subscribe. You may want to take a second and leave a great review or a 4-star rating even while you're at it. I also recommend you go to CryptoPodcaster.com and see all my other podcasts and websites for the world of Bitcoin. There's a lot of them to look at.
Thanks for listening to the Crypto Cousins podcast. Please share the show with your friends. They can subscribe by going to CryptoCousins.com/subscribe. And if you want to know more about Gary, just go to GaryLeland.com. Make sure and join Gary and all the Crypto Cousins every week for a new episode of the Crypto Cousins podcast. The Crypto Cousins podcast and the information included in the podcast are not intended as investment advice. Investing in any cryptocurrency is risky, and you should never invest more than you can afford to lose. Always seek professional advice before investing in any cryptocurrency. Please understand, you are using any and all information from the Crypto Cousins at your own risk.